What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up with CNB. I forgot to mention, it's the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. I'm Connor, the C, as always, with the V himself, Vladimir, on a nice Tuesday evening. What's going on?
Not much. Back from Atlanta, had a great trip. Did a couple of things that we wouldn't normally do. We went go-karting with some friends, kind of in like just like I don't want to call it like a racetrack in the mountains, but that's essentially what it is, pretty much in like the hick parts of Georgia, and it was super, super fun. And again, that's just like something that I would never suggest. One of my other friends would never suggest, and the third one was like, "Well, let's try it." And I was like, "Yeah, why not?" Had a blast down there. Had a good time, got some sun. I've been told by a couple people at work that I'm looking darker, looking tan. And I was like, yeah,
You
went down
are, even
there.
on the Zoom.
Huh?
I said, even on the Zoom, you look a little darker.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. Thank you. But that's good. We're getting ready for the 4th of July tan off. But other than that, there's one kind of entertaining story from when we were down in Atlanta that'll bring up that kind of pertains to the golf. But other than that, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I also had a pretty solid weekend. Got into practice or out of practice. I had a family friend, well, slash neighbor's grad party this weekend. Forgot how much fun those can be sometimes when you're with the right crowd. So that was fun. My thought, though, enough about me, because I kind of do the same shit every day at this point. I live modern day Groundhog's Day. The go-karting, that I mean, that's not just like Paradise Park. Like, I'd assume that that's some hybrid between what you think of when you think of go-karting and like borderline racing.
Yeah, I mean the top speed of the carts was like 60 miles an hour,
That's
so
pretty high.
yeah, that was you weren't running around with some little Jeepers
25 mile an
powered
hour.
batteries, but you also weren't going through with just absolute rockets. But yeah, a lot of fun. That there was some racing, and like I was of the slower people in the group, since I was like anytime I was going into a turn, I would see if someone was behind me, and if there was, I'd just kind of stay off to the side because I don't need to have some hothead bin me or claim I did something wrong and then try and fight me after we take the helmets off. So I stayed out of people's way. I had my fun, got to some high speeds when I could.
Been in enough motor vehicle accidents recently.
You're funny. That's a good one. That's a very good one. Yes, we've been in enough motor vehicle accidents in the last 12 days to not need another one. So it was fun. I'm trying to think if there's anything else like noteworthy there. But no,
Was so was like more than just you guys?
it was me and then two friends who lived down there.
No, I know, but like your group of
Oh
people.
yeah, we had the it varied based on sessions. You kind of go out in 10-minute increments, and so like the first session, let's say we had 20 people. The second one was we were pretty lucky. We had like 10, and it was a lot more open. So that was when I got my fastest time because I was kind of getting over less for people and not worrying about who's behind me. And then the
How long
last
was the
one,
track?
probably a mile and something. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So this is legit.
Oh yeah,
This isn't
it was fun.
like I said, this is no Paradise Park. Don't know if you have a Paradise Park or an equivalent in the Rochester area.
No, we do not have
That's
Paradise
what
Park. I don't know what that is.
it's like a Chuck E. Cheese, a slightly nicer Chuck E.
Okay.
Cheese, maybe. Like game room, arcade. Go-karting, putt-putt. Last day of school vibes in elementary school and middle
We had Chuck
school.
E. Cheese, but we did not have a Paradise Park.
Chuck E. Cheese, how is that still around? Not to get
I
all
don't think it
Paradise Park
is.
here. They are. Barely.
Where have you seen a Chuck E. Cheese in the last decade?
That no the Novi's like kind of like where we parked for the golf show, or where
Interesting.
we met up for the golf show. And then we went to the simulator there. There's a Chuck E. Cheese around there.
Interesting. I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
like a really big one.
Well, look at you guys over there on the west side of Metro Detroit getting crazy, having some fun.
Yeah. That's the first time I've thought about it being the west side of Metro Detroit, but I guess it is. Anyways, we kind of not as kind of the playoffs wear down here. We're going to deep dive, games 1 through 3 of the NHL. Stanley Cup final and then the NBA finals. And then we also have the US Open to talk about this week at Oakmont. Maybe a lighter episode, but it'll still be fun. And it's about all important topics. Yeah, let's get into it. I think we usually start with the golf when we have the golf to talk about. The US Open, the toughest test in golf, as people say. And I think it'll be put up to the challenge this year at Oakmont. Oakmont has always been considered one of the most treacherous courses of the US major circuit. It's kind of one of the ones you think about when you think about US major or US Open courses. And everything I've seen is that they've US Open-fied an already US Open-fied course. It's going to play tough. It's going to play very long. It's one of those ones that, like, if you went and looked at the property, like, without walking around, I actually like, and obviously the pew bunkers and stuff like that aside, I actually don't think it looks like on paper as hard as some other courses out there.
No
I just
trees,
think, yeah, there's
no
no, yeah,
water.
exactly. There's no trees. There's little to no water.
There is no water, but there's an
No
interstate.
water. There you go. And it's just kind of like you look out there and you go, oh, I can put the ball anywhere just from that visual alone. And that's extremely not the case. It's some of the narrowest fairways there are. Like I mentioned, the pew bunkers, there's some ridiculous amount of hundreds of bunkers on that course. And it's going to be playing about 7,600 yards. It's one of the longest courses, too, that they'll see out there. I guess from a player's perspective, I think you put it in text best is it's everybody not named Scottie Scheffler is going to be fighting for par, and Scottie Scheffler won't be. So it's his tournament to lose until somebody else beats him. He's obviously won twice since the Masters, or sorry, since the PGA Championship. And I don't really have any, I don't like, there's not a ton else to say. Obviously, Bryson's the defending champion. I think Rory's coming in okay form after a Masters win this year. Like, you can never count him out. I do think this is a weekend, though. I think I mentioned with the PGA how it's a weekend where you sometimes see a little odder names because it's as far as under par score wise for the winner, it can be the highest sometimes. This is not going to be the case. In 2016, when they played, Dustin Johnson won. He shot minus four and he was only one of four players under par. And I'd imagine it's probably somewhere around there. I don't see the winning score being more than or less than five under here. I think it's going to be a chalky name this week just because of that point. And just there aren't a lot of guys that are going to be able to keep up with this golf course for 4 days.
So I probably should have stopped you earlier just to kind of get this funny story out of the way. But when we were in Atlanta the Friday night after we went out, we came back and one of the friends, he lives in pretty much kind of like student housing. So if you think about it, it's like kind of like the hub or a Skyview where you have like your rooftop pools and everything. And so we went up to the pool at the end of the night and we're just chilling, talking. And then a group of like students kind of came in. I don't know how old they were, but we kind of started talking to them. We asked them, oh yeah, so what do you guys do? And this one girl pipes up, I work for Mizuno. And like right away, I kind of like my ears perked up. I was like, you have to be sick to work for Mizuno because that is not necessarily one of your big brands in golf, especially in the United States, but it is a prestigious one. And so I started talking to her afterwards. She's like, yeah, I'm like a plus two handicap. I've played all, starts listing the courses she's playing. Like, this is where I think that like she wasn't lying because it was coming from her. I wasn't really, you know, she's like, I've played Pinehurst. I played Oakmont for my graduation present. We're going out to California to play Pebble and Spyglass. And I'm just sitting there like in shock.
What school is this right there? Emory, I'm
Georgia
assuming.
Tech.
Georgia Tech, okay.
Yeah, so that was like a that was a very entertaining story. Like when she brought up the Oakmont thing, because I think that was what maybe what she led off with. And I was just like, Mizuno Oakmont, like this person has to be ridiculous.
Which is so funny because my first thought too was when I saw it was Oakmont a couple of days ago, it's in like a random suburb of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Like, who thought that that was going to be the heart? Like, I don't know. That doesn't strike me as golf look like luxury golfing trips when you think of it, and it's just interesting. So, was she on the Georgia Tech team?
I didn't really get to that point of as it was like we were just talking about that. They kind of broke off into their own separate thing and they went back. It wasn't, I would assume so, or maybe she just doesn't care to do that and just is loaded from a family that can afford all these things.
Yeah, affording to go play at Oakmont and Pebble Beach, like it's
Some Southern money. But no,
yeah.
it was an entertaining conversation. It was, like I said, like you should have seen like my ears perk up as soon as I hear Mizuno and then like starts talking. I'm like, Oakmont, like you must be nasty.
What does she do?
What she was like marketing for Mizuno.
Like in the golf department, I'm assuming if you're a plus two handicap.
I would assume so, yeah.
Yeah,
Again, I
because
did.
they do a few other sports. Although they've slowly kind of, I feel like, been more almost all golf.
Yeah. So
Because
that was.
they were a big baseball brand for a while too.
Yeah, that was kind of an entertaining Oakmont story. As for the actual course, I hope the following rant is going to be a little like incorrect, but like I'm kind of tired every year we do this podcast and it's like, oh my God, this is going to be the hardest course ever. The rough is 10,000 feet long and the greens are 20 on a stint meter. It is quite literally downhill ice with no gravity or friction. And then magically before the tournament, they cut down the rough. The patrons or the fans, whatever, we have to call them fans here. Sorry, Augusta, please don't sue me for copyright infringement. But they all trample it down and then you see guys go low. So
Yeah.
I think that's kind of been the running thing from the last couple of US Opens, and I'd like to see that kind of change. Because like again, we go back a year ago, 365 days ago, we heard turtle shell greens. Oh my goodness, this is the toughest course ever. And you were looking at guys at -7, -6. Sure, at the end of it, there's only a select few that are at the
I
top
was
and
going to say, I think there were only six or seven guys below
no,
par.
and that kind of plays to your point of, oh, like this is where the elite separate themselves, but I feel like at times we kind of pretend and we say, oh, the USGA is going to get these guys. They're going to finally get a laugh. And then you see some guy come out and pop some crazy number.
It's very interesting you say that because I feel like the consensus from last year was almost this place was too hard and not even fun for them at points,
Again,
which
like I
is
said, maybe
I
I'm
don't
out of.
necessarily. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I do think it's interesting from that. But I mean, that came off of like, I think the year before was the Wyndham Clark at LACC, which people were like, that was a pathetic US Open as far as how that course played for them. And I mean, I still think he only shot like -8 or -9 to win, but still, I think a lot of people had a lot of complaints about that, the way that course was set up the entire weekend, not only just from how it played, but from some of the logistical things as well. And then now you came into Pinehurst, which is kind of an iconic location, and all that turtle greens. And early on, people were like, "This isn't fun." And I think it's only going to get harder this year. It is an interesting point with how long that rough is without any trees or like Pinehurst has kind of that the greens and then the like feathery stuff is not a good way to put it, but you know what, like the sand meeting the like shrubs basically. And this course doesn't really have that. I know it's super narrow, but like it is like if it does really get trampled down, like a guy like DeChambeau that can just hit it as far as he wants, like how does that affect it? I don't know. From everything I've seen, it's we'll see. I guess my question to you is, what would you want to see then for, oh my God, the USGA got him? Would it be like the winning score being the only person below par type thing?
I don't know if I have the exact answer. If I did, I'd be in a different room concocting the answer to the important people of the golf courses. But I would say something like tight fairways, and maybe this is a bigger one. Push the fans back. Now, yes, it's unfortunate they're not close and they can't maybe see the ball as good, but actually punish a miss. The guy goes 5 yards right and ends up in the crowd. Act punish that. Push them back, and maybe don't cut the rough before the tournament starts, like they say every single time.
Yeah, we'll see how this one plays though, because I like a large part of that is like all the bunkers out there, and you can't cut fans can't go in the bunkers, fans can't cut those down. So it seems like a lot of messes left from what I've seen on that golf course is you're basically gone into a bunker. I'm gonna go out a limb. I'm actually gonna pick Colin Morikawa to win this week.
Interesting. You see, he's taking
That's
driver on that par three.
I saw that he hit that baby cut there on that par three. I think that one's was playing 290 that day, which is like, come on. It's funny because they have I think that hole is going to play as high as 290 and anywhere from like 230 to 290 depending on the day. And then I think like three or four holes before that, they have a par four that's playing anywhere from 300 to 315.
Yep.
So it's not even, it's 10 yards shorter.
Oh yeah. No, so I
It'd
mean,
be a
I've been
four.
playing the new PGA game. Obviously, they got the majors this year, and I can call myself a bit of an Oakmont expert. I've been playing it. I'm gonna be ready for this tournament. I'm gonna be watching. I'm like, I've missed there, I've missed there, and I'm gonna feel like I'm part of the team.
Yeah. It's got me thinking though with the US Open is how much preparation goes into that to A that they haven't even had it in 9 years, and the like I think of Oakland Hills isn't supposed to have it for like another 6 years, and they're already like trying to US Openify that course 6 years away. So we'll see. Who besides Scottie Scheffler, who do you got? That's kind of where we're at now. You have to take somebody not named Scottie Scheffler.
It's hard for me to go against the grain just because I think after we talk about the PGA, I mean, you look at the last six majors, they're won by the best players in the world. I mean, you want to say maybe Jon Rahm uses the PGA as a, hey, I still belong here, and this time I'm not going to collapse. As a, if we even consider Jon Rahm an outsider, but maybe that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a consensus best three players in the world right now, and I think for a long time, Jon Rahm is clearly not one of those guys, and I think
Yep.
that's got to bug him because he was definitely one of those guys for a few years there, and he still should be given where he's at, age and game wise, and
Agree.
he's not on that list, and you know, for good reason because he hasn't played great golf since he's really made the move, other than the last major, but it's pretty clearly Bryson, Scotty, and Rory's world right now, and everybody else is living in it.
Yep. I don't have anything else golf related. Where do we start? Hockey or basketball?
Let's start with the NHL since there's been more games.
Sounds good.
So the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. It's 2-1 Florida. You saw probably two of the better Stanley Cup playoff games you'll ever see in games one and games two, and then an absolute stinker last night. To kind of start with game one, a game where it's clear Edmonton, even though Florida won on their home ice last night, Edmonton is going to have why I don't think they're done after two bad losses here is because it's clear that they have the home ice. That ice was rocking in game one. It's pretty bone chilling. The I don't know if you've seen the stand the it's the national anthem. I guess it is their national anthem. When they do their national anthem, it's like this bigger ball guy who like does it in like row like 25 in the stands, and they just put a and he like sing, basically sings like the first verse, and then the whole crowd sings the rest of the thing together, and it gave me chills every time I've seen it so far this playoffs. And they've really brought it those first two games. They had a huge home ice advantage, even though Florida went down early. And Edmonton really didn't lead for much of that game. And then what happens is they get a big break. They force it to overtime. And then who else but Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl will get it done in overtime. The big play there to get it to McDavid on the overtime goal was Corey Perry. I think he deserves a kind of a shout out for what he's done. I mentioned in previewing the series that Zach Hyman, who usually plays with McDavid, is out for the series and will not be returning. And Corey Perry at 40 years old has stepped up into that role and has been every bit of what Zach Hyman could do for them. So that's been kind of huge for them. And then game two, the magic happens again. They score with, I think it was like 27 seconds left or something like that to force the game into overtime. That thing goes to about 1 o'clock in the morning, two overtimes, and who gets it done? Brad Marchand, who was basically like, if you watch those two overtimes, pretty much every scoring chance they had came from Brad Marchand, who's a guy who's been a superstar leader his whole career for another team, comes over at age 36, 37, whatever he is, late 30s now, and has kind of played in a middle six role for them and not been the point per game guy. He hasn't needed to be with this group, and he's just been the rat that he has been. And I think that has gotten in guys like McDavid's head. I'll talk about it last night. Is that the impact that when all your top players like that are just absolute rats that are willing to get in people's heads, that don't really care about doing stuff that might be a little outside of the rules, so to speak, and are getting it done when it matters the most in terms of scoring overtime goals like that. Now you can talk about the goal itself. It was a breakaway, so you can never really say a breakaway is the goalie's fault, but he didn't even shoot it. It just kind of fell out of his stick, and Skinner, like, I don't know if he overslid it, but it just got kind of fell under him and into the back of the net. And they, as far as Florida's concerned, that was a win, going 1-1 in Edmonton with the home ice advantage that they have. And then there's not much to say about what happened last night. Is it was just an absolute stinker. Wasn't Stuart Skinner's best game by any means, but Florida just came in waves, and they're so hard to play against when they can get all four lines into the game like that. And they kind you kind of just looked up at that second period, and it went from 1-1 to 4-1 with a snap of the fingers, and they never really knew what hit them. And then McDavid went to the locker room for an injury on kind of a just a it wasn't even that hard of a hit, just an awkward hit he took from Ekblad. He came back and didn't really look like himself either. And you could just tell for the whole night that they were frustrated, and they were trying to, at the end of the second period, get Florida into some stuff. And it just, you can't really try and do Florida's game when you're down 4-1. They just don't want to do it to you. And yeah, it's just a stinker. Do I think they're done? No. I think they're going to get some better goaltending than what they got there. And I do think they're going to have a much better performance in game four in on the away ice now. I don't like Florida. Florida's fine. It's a fine home atmosphere, but you got to get one there. And they're not done from, like I said, because I do think home ice for them is a huge advantage. If you got to a game seven in this series, like, I think it'll still go. And for Florida, they're just, you just know what you're going to get from them at this point. And it's four lines that are going to come right at you. They play hard. All their best players are rats, like I said. And they're willing to do whatever Paul Maurice wants them to do. And, you know, they've got one of the best goalies in the world when he's hot, and he's been fine in this series. So I look for that to continue. I do like Florida. It's hard not to say you like Florida after watching last night's game, but that's the NHL. It's been a great series so far, despite the stinker in game three, but two of the better finishes you'll ever see in hockey in games one and two. So good on that series. 2-1 Florida.
Yeah, I guess the only observation I was going to make is I watched game one, watched game three, and game three was kind of, I was like, wow, this Skinner fella leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is like what I said. I think I said it in the conference finals when I was ranking the four goalies, is he's by far the worst. He's in their runs the last two seasons, had his moments where he's looked great, but he's lost it. He's lost the net in this year, in this playoffs, and he's not really regarded as anything more than average, quite frankly. So if that continues, you just have no chance in a series that on the ice is that even, besides the goaltending situation. And obviously, we'll see how healthy McDavid is, because clearly he's now battling something.
To the basketball side, only two games because the NBA is stupid and soft and forces these guys to get or gives them 2 days rest in between every game, even if it's not a travel day, which is ridiculous. But
It's almost like you forget about the series. Like, I
no, you
was like,
do.
oh, Sunday night. Oh yeah, it's that the NBA's on again.
See you on Wednesday. It's awful. And like I know the NHL has to then work around it because they can't schedule the games on the same night. That's just bad business decisions. Even if you think that you want to compete, that's just a poor business decision to have both of them on the same night. So they have to follow suit, and it's dumb. But the actual games, they've been very similar in the sense that OKC starts out very well with this smothering defense, especially in game one, where I want to say that the Thunder were somewhere in the maybe 20s for, or I say Thunder, the Pacers were somewhere in the 20s for turnovers. And then in game one, the Pacers do what this Pacers team does, which is kind of their little deal with the devil. And Aaron Nesmith starts hitting shots, and Tyrese Halliburton wakes up for the last 12 minutes, whatever cryo sleep he's been in for the first 36. And then they hit a shot on you. I think it's insane. I don't know if you've seen the statistic. They pulled some. This is obviously going to be a very tailored statistic to make Halliburton seem better than it's a puff piece, but it's still ridiculous. It's some like in the last minute or something, or buzzer beaters this season to kind of go ahead. He's like 12 of 14 from the field. That's a ridiculous percentage.
I heard it. I have an even crazier one is in his career, he has, I think it's the last possession, he has five playoff wins or makes. Only one other player in the whole NBA for their career has more than that.
Is that LeBron?
It's LeBron James.
Makes
And he
sense.
only has seven.
Yeah, that's ridiculous for a guy who's played what, 2 years of playoff series, I think now? Maybe
Yeah.
two and a half with whatever he might have. No, I don't think he ever did anything in Sacramento. So I would guess 2 years of playoff series. So that's ridiculous. It's funny that he's kind of gone on this tear this postseason after being rated by players as the most overrated in the league. So I'm sure there's a little bit of motivation there, but that's awesome. Obviously, you see the Thunder kind of collapse late, and the offense sputtered and allowed the Pacers to get back into it. And again, Haliburton does what he does. Game two was the exact same thing. Defense, the Pacers playing from behind, they can't get a foothold in the game because again, these guys are smothering you. And part of it, as I think I ranted during the Denver series, part of it's just some of these whistles are a little unfair, where it's like Alex Caruso could take out nunchucks and like beat protesters the way like and they wouldn't call anything. It's ridiculous the way you see this guy grabbing people. Lu Dort is borderline undressing some of these Pacers players and they don't call anything. But what are you gonna do? It is what it is, that the refs try and swallow their whistles, but they kind of need to swallow them both ways. I don't want to rehash this rant from a couple weeks ago, but yeah, we'll see game three tomorrow or the day of when people are listening. I honestly don't think I'm going to change my prediction of Thunder in five. I know they did steal game one, but I just think that the mismatch between the teams is that great, and they used their little miracle run, and the Thunder used up their little just inexplicable loss, which they've done in every series at one point where you think they're in control and they blink and they've lost it. And I think they get this done, winning the next three.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't watch game one. I watched game two, and it is a clear it's first of all, Shea, like SGA is like so clearly the best player on the floor there. When I watch that as someone that doesn't watch the NBA regularly, and like you said, it just seems like a defensively they're just so in rhythm with each other that they're not going to be able to do that for four straight games, and Tyrese Haliburton's not going to hit three more buzzer beaters in one series. So,
Well, the other thing about Haliburton, which is crazy, because like as we praise the clutch ability, he's also a role player for the first 36 minutes. Like, you mentioned
yeah.
game two. He was running a triple single for the first 2.5 quarters. And it's like, you can't be the star if you're going to be out there with 4 points, one assist, three rebounds, and five turnovers. That is not a stat line your best player can ever have, and you expect to win a game.
I
So.
also thought like his for like regular season stats I was looking at, he it's like six assists and 16 points a game is like that's not I don't know, I was for a guy that's considered like an all-star type player, I was expecting a little more, but that's just me not knowing ball, unfortunately.
No, I agree. I don't really. It's unfortunate that like we can't break down more games, or maybe have different breakdowns the way you did with the hockey, because you did have different styles of games, but you played the same game. It's just the Thunder used up their brain fart. I guess if we want to talk another thing about sports, we don't wrap this up uber early. On Sunday, you had the French Open. Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz. It was a brilliant match. It's one of those instant classics now that if in 10 years' time both of these guys are sitting on double-digit majors and maybe do what their talent level implies they should be able to do in terms of accomplishments, it will be talked about like the likes of a Federer and Nadal 2008 at Wimbledon, or a Nadal and Djokovic at 2012 in Australia. That this will go down as one of the best tennis matches of all time. I don't know if I really need to break it down game by game, set by set on this podcast, just 'cause I don't know how many people listening will really give a shit. But you had Jannik Sinner have three championship points, albeit not on his own serve. He misses all of them with a couple of kind of long and out shots. Alcaraz then breaks his serve. So Jannik had the ball on his own racket to win the tournament, couldn't do it. And then in the fifth set, it was kind of not over, but at that point, Jannik had kind of mentally checked out, and he's kind of sitting there just replaying probably those championship points, saying, "How is this possible? How do I not win this title?" It's incredibly cool that you have these guys playing at this absurdly high level. They're way above the rest of the sport. It's not even particularly close. And so we'll kind of.
They're both really young too,
Yep.
right?
Yes, you've got Sinner at 23 or 24, and then Alcaraz at 22 or 23.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a lot ahead of them. You'll probably need another person to show up because two people dominating is boring. You need a third, but they'll burn that
Just say
bridge.
that because we had three for a while,
Yes.
or
Because you had the big three in tennis. Two's boring. But yeah, I guess that's a very quick extend the episode by a couple minutes speech on an
yeah,
incredible
and
tennis
I
match.
got another topic to extend. We should give some more props to the Detroit Tigers. I like I've
Yes.
given it in passing, but they're starting to officially be like worth like this is they're not going away enough to where, and every time you think they're going away, like they went two out of four that last week against the White Sox. Obviously not a great result considering the opponent. And then you go into a big weekend series at home against the Cubs, who are the second best team in baseball, and you win two out of three. They're here to stay. They just got to get healthy on that pitching staff front again. And Tarek Skubal has, he won the Triple Crown last year for pitching and the Cy Young, and he's been every bit as good, if not better, this year. Unfortunately, there's been some, not necessarily in the AL, but there's been other guys that have been just as good this year, unlike last year. But he has upped his game even more, and he looks more and more unhittable every time he
He's
goes
a
out there.
psychopath. I love him.
It's a psychopath. He's super fun to watch pitch. He throws 100 miles an hour. He throws sliders. He yells at hitters. He yells at fans. He's like just this like bag of meat, and he's just the greatest pitcher in baseball right now.
I
So.
know Scott Boras doesn't let his clients talk early because he knows that there's more money on the open market, but if Pizza Boy lets Scooble leave, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and like people were like talking
Don't
about
say
it, like
butt
they
here.
should.
You're
What?
setting yourself up for a butt.
No, I people were like on like sports radio and stuff like that talking about it maybe at the beginning of the season, like they like it should be a possibility. Like, well, think of all the prospects you could get if you traded them at the deadline. It's like that makes zero sense now. You have the best team in baseball. I don't think they're actually the best team in baseball in a 162 game season, but you have a clear playoff team in an AL that's wide open and going to be wide open with the fourth best farm system in baseball and the third youngest team in the MLB. It makes no sense to trade a 28-year-old in his prime or not sign a 28-year-old in his prime. And that's really going to be like there. This Tigers team, I do think, is going to be here for a while if Pizza Boy wants to pay everybody. Because eventually Riley Green's going to need a $30 million deal. Eventually Tarek Skubal is going to need a $40 million, and who knows how many years. You're probably giving Tarek Skubal half a billion dollars, to be honest. I mean, like Torkelson's going to need a deal soon, whatever that number is going to be. All these guys are going to get paid at some point. It's just, will the money come? And hopefully they see what an investment it can be for their business as owning the Tigers. Like, I don't know if you saw any Snapchat stories of anything of people at those Tigers games this weekend, but that's the fullest I've ever seen that ballpark since like 2011. It's dead full, even in the upper deck. That's something we haven't seen really in our adult lifetimes at all. And I hope that continues so that it's a signal that they need to spend money and they need to keep this thing going for as long as they can, because they have a chance to be good for many years, I think.
I agree. I didn't see the Snapchats, but I saw the statistics. They said like the weekend attendance for the Tigers was their largest non-playoff weekend attendance, or maybe three game series attendance in like the last decade. So yeah, you're completely right. This is a sellout. There is no more, "Hey, let's just buy tickets up there and we'll just sneak on down to the third base line and chit
Right.
chat and maybe catch a foul ball with the beer in our hands." And there's no more of that. You're absolutely correct. I guess maybe the only thing I'll say to you and the people listening is get ready for $7, $8 hot and ready pizzas so that we can pay for all these guys.
Yeah, it's already up to six. It's I think it's up to 650 now.
Oh, these
So,
goofballs.
yeah. And if you want it, if you want some stuffed crust, it's like $9, but deservedly so, I guess. They probably
Are we about to
charge
start
more.
breaking down Little Caesars pizza on the pod?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been the biggest advocate of where are you gonna get a pizza now for 650? Like, and I know the problem is like it's Penn Station for me. Like it, you get a really good hot and ready. It's I think it's up there with any chain pizza, to be honest. But if you get a really bad one, it is
You're sick.
inedible. Inedible. Yeah,
Yep.
inedible.
I can't argue that in the slightest.
So that's the analysis, I guess, on Little Caesar's Pizza. I think we can close off the episode with that one.
I agree before we completely lose it. So I guess I'll take the lead on the last words. If you made it this far, thank you. We will do more Tigers, like you said. They've gotten past the hot stretch. This is just a flat out good team, and we talk about good teams, especially ones in our area. So there will be more Tigers going forward that'll help extend the links. And in that case, I'm gonna leave everyone off with a go Tigers, or eat 'em
Yum
up
up,
Tigers, like
Tigers.
the one guy before he got hit by a car.
Is that how he died?
Yeah.
That was like 2012.
Something like that.
Yeah. Eat 'em up, Tigers.